All right, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, it's always nice to visit another UC campus, especially one that's so close to the beach. To get the question that many of you may have in your minds out of the way first, this animal is an anteater. It's not a better mascot than a gaucho, but at least I know what it is, so there you go. All right, so we're here to talk about dark matter. And in particular, I think I was asked to talk about dark matter and accelerators. There was actually some question where we were relying on Laura to resolve what I had been asked to talk about, and she decided not to. So hopefully this will be useful for the conference. And if it's not, it's all Laura's fault. So no, it's not. It's all my fault. All right, so this is sort of, I think, part of the general discussion we're going to have that starts now and goes on for the next few days. We're going to see basically what our knowledge of dark matter is from a particle physics side, along with from astronomical probes. So this starts with accelerators, and of course there'll be stuff about indirect detection and direct detection later on. So the basic idea is that if the dark particles have some coupling to the Standard Model particles, then we should also be able to produce them at accelerators. To make the most of the accelerator searches, what we need to understand is how these searches map onto our favorite theories of dark matter, what they're telling us in general about dark matter's properties, and then also how they fit in with other kinds of searches for dark matter. And answering these questions is really an exercise in theory. And the question, of course, is which theories to use. So the good news is that particle theorists write lots of papers. And if you track, this is actually made by Sasha Believ, if you track the number of papers written on different topics over a number of years, there was a lot of debate about what was going on sort of around here, which actually does at least roughly correspond with what was being said at the time on both sides. You can see that dark matter has really become actually a very big area of activity in theoretical physics. Actually, it's not just theoretical physics. I should say that these are actually all papers, so it's also a big area of experimental physics too. But as a result, there's lots of different options. And then this is the plot that Alex showed us this morning that I made as part of the snow mass exercise. I have to say, I did not think of him as my muse at the time, but I could do far, far worse. So what it is a Venn diagram that's trying to communicate something about how different theories are related to each other. Maybe it's abstract art. It actually turns out it's being turned into a piece of stained glass. I put it up here, maybe in the roof of the Cathedral of Supersymmetry. But the point is that there are a lot of theories. So the way I usually decompose these theories is basically based on how complete they are. So this is kind of like a spectrum in which you can place theories. It's an axis. On one end, you have theories that are very complete. So our very favorite theories, like maybe the minimal supersymmetric Standard Model, live down here. These are theories you can really ask any question up to around the gut or the Planck scale, and you can get a sensible answer from them. Moving down, there are simplified models. These are more like sketches of theories, places where you try to describe the physics that matters to you, but you don't really need to get into all the full detail of all the things that go on in a complete theory. And of course, if you go even further down, you get into effective field theories and other types of things like conjectures or hypotheses. So I'm going to say a little bit about what the status is of terms of using these kinds of theories to search for dark matter at accelerators. And to begin with the complete theories, you know, our favorite complete theory is, of course, the minimal supersymmetric Standard Model. It predicts that there are lots of new particles, one to go with every Standard Model particle. It has a lot of neutral particles that can play the role of dark matter, and they all tend to get mixed up together, which makes it somewhat confusing to interpret exactly what we're learning. This is just a small selection of some of the up-to-date searches that are going on. Right now at the Large Hadron Collider. Obviously, I can't show you all of them, or it would take more time than I even have just for this talk. So these particular searches are looking for missing energy plus some number of jets of hadrons. So the idea is that your protons come in, they collide, they produce some supersymmetric particle. In this case, it's a gluino, the partner of the gluon. It gets produced usually with large rates because it participates in the strong nuclear force. It then decays, and for a lot of parameter space, it likes to decay into a pair of quarks and a dark matter particle, or a neutralino. That happens to both of the gluinos that we produce. They have to be produced in pairs because that's what makes the dark matter stable, ultimately. Each of these quarks turns into a jet of hadrons, and so you would guess that in an event like this at the Large Hadron Collider, you'd expect to see something like four energetic jets of hadrons that are initiated by all of these four quarks, and then some imbalance in the transverse momentum that comes from the fact that you have neutralinos. So they search for that, both ATLAS and CMS. These are plots that are made by the ATLAS collaboration, but you can find very similar plots from the CMS collaboration. A little bit of complication is that sometimes you get more or less jets because maybe these quarks end up on top of each other and you can't distinguish that there are actually two things going on. Or maybe you actually radiate some extra quark and as part of the hard collision. That gives you more jets. So what they do is they put together a large number of channels looking for some number of jets plus the momentum imbalance, right? Because the missing momentum is really the key that there's something being produced here you can't detect. There are backgrounds because the standard model does this by producing neutrinos. And that happens actually quite often, so there's big backgrounds. They put them together and then they interpret it in the parameter space that is the mass of the gluino, so the parent particle, and then the mass of the neutralino on this axis. Now, because supersymmetry actually fixes the interactions of the gluino and therefore the rate of its production as a function of its mass, there is no other parameter really that's very important here. At least for this process, this is the only thing that matters in the supersymmetric model. Putting together the large number of channels, they get an exclusion curve that looks like this solid red line. It's got these funny wiggles, not really because of any deep physics, but just because they're combining a bunch of different types of search channels together. And some of them, you know, are a little better or a little worse. They've been optimized to deal with, you know, roughly different regions of mass space. But since they're not all optimized for each point in the mass plane, there are some interesting curves that come about when you put them together. There's nothing deep there, though, and you can imagine that a better design search would probably have done something more smooth. And by better, I just mean throwing more computer power at this problem than it frankly warrants. So I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying this is what they do. So looking at this, you can see that if the neutralino mass, right, or if the dark matter mass is very low, you know, maybe not literally zero GeV, but just a few GeV, then the limit you get on the mass of the gluino is something like 2 TeV. And that's a big part of why people say supersymmetry is not in very good shape. We really wanted the masses of the superpartners to be a little bit lighter than that to have a natural explanation for why the Higgs mass turned out to be so light. But I would say that this is still something that you could live with if you're a SUSY aficionado. And so it's not really fair to say that supersymmetry is dead, just to say that it's not giving us everything that we wanted it to. On the other hand, of course, if I go to a larger value for the dark matter mass, like maybe around 800 GeV or even a TeV, then I can still rule out some region of masses of gluinos, but of course it's a smaller window and ultimately the upper limit is less. The reason why there's a lower limit is because at some point your search is just not sensitive to this particular decay in the channel that you're looking, and so you can't say anything. And there's a line here that's theoretically motivated. This is where the mass of the gluino would become less than the mass of the neutralino. You don't want that to happen because if that were the case, then what you would really do, at least cosmologically, is produce neutralinos, and then they would decay into gluinos, and they would be a bad thing to play the role of dark matter. Over here, we have something similar for neutralinos and squarks. Now, the search channel is a little bit different. I produce the pairs of squarks. They decay into a jet and plus some missing momentum. Again, there's a number of searches. They give me some interesting wiggle. There's also some statistical thing here from how many events I happen to get in each channel, but mostly this is just the searches interacting with each other. And you can see that we're sensitive up to squark masses around 1.5 TeV or so. So these are really interesting limits. The specific message for dark matter is not totally clear, because while these are definitely producing the dark matter, and so the dark matter is part of what's going into these searches, it's not exactly clear what this means in terms of, is this a thermal relic? How was it scatter with nuclei? How would it annihilate, and what would it produce that we could see here on Earth? All those questions are there in the model, but these particular parameters are not really the relevant questions, except for the mass of the neutralino. Obviously, that's a relevant one. So you can do similar things looking at different types of channels. Here's a hypothesis where we produce a pair of gluinos. Now the gluinos, though, are decaying into top quarks. Top quarks are special because they themselves decay they're very heavy compared to the other quarks. They decay and they produce leptons. That changes the search strategy. There's a number of different channels here depending on how many leptons are involved, 0, 1, or greater than or equal to 2. There's some further selections, like for example, SS stands for same sign. You ask for two of the leptons to have the same sign. That doesn't happen as often in the standard model, so it's good for backgrounds. And again, you get to put a limit in the plane of the gluino mass versus the neutralino mass. The actual reaches are very similar to the plot that we saw before. So this search channel is different, but it's actually comparable to the other one. it tests some of the other hidden parameters that control how the Galileo exactly decays, obviously. Or you can look directly for production of the scalar top quark. That's the partner of the ordinary top quark. Here now, we're plotting things in the plane of the mass of the top quark and the neutralino. We're getting up to stop masses that are around a TeV or so. And this is really the natural regions of supersymmetry. So you know, this plot is very impactful as far as how we think about supersymmetry. Again, whether you think that supersymmetry is worth thinking about anymore or not is sort of up to you. I would say it's definitely not what we hoped supersymmetry would be. On the other hand, maybe I could still live with it for at least another year or two. That sounded more negative out loud than it did in my head. But it's fairly accurate, actually. Also, there's some interesting structure here, and that's because some of these searches are really trying to get at this region here where the masses of the two particles are very degenerate, with that is, the mass of the top quark is approaching the mass of the top plus the neutralino. There's very little energy released, and so you need a specialized search strategy to access that.
Can you tell us what's the big loss if it was lower than
the big loss?
Yeah.
Oh, no, what we wanted was it to be lower than a TeV. What we're unhappy with is the fact that it's heavier. And it's all basically based on the fact that supersymmetry, we want it to be there to correct some corrections to the Higgs mass that come from the top quark. And you know, any particle, as you make it heavier and heavier, right, quantum field theory tells you its effects decouple away. And so as you make it heavier and heavier, it is having a harder time canceling what the top is doing. So most people would have said it should have been down around here to really do the job well. Now we're kind of pushing the bounds of good taste, maybe. And of course, in the future, the LHC is going to run for another few decades. It's going to say more. Here are some simulations, again by Atlas, that are looking at production of, say, gluinos decaying again into two jets. Each gluino decays into two jets of hadrons plus a neutralino. And you can see that, you know, where we are now was up here around 2 TeV. We're going to get eventually up to about 3 TeV or so. It's going to take a long time, so it may be hard to read, but this line basically tells you that what you need is something on the order of about 30 times more data that we have now. It's not going to take 30 times as long, though, because the accelerator is getting better as it goes. But it's a fairly modest improvement, I have to say. And this is a similar thing looking at a different channel producing electroweakly interacting particles. In this case, it produces the partner of the W boson together with the partner of the Z boson, which then decays into dark matter particles plus a W and a Z boson. And you can see that you can get up to masses around a TeV or so. One thing I wanted to mention, and it doesn't actually have much to do with dark matter, but it's interesting, so I wanted to say something about it. There was recently an analysis by a group of theorists at Rutgers University, and what they've done is they've actually just looked at all the searches that look for missing momentum plus jets of hadrons and asked, is there any place where we can find an excess? And it turns out that there is. There's an excess in a specific channel that's it's most significant, actually, if you look at it in jets and then plus a cut on something called MT2, which is just some way of processing the missing momentum. It's not very significant, so it's a little bit more than 2 sigma away from the expectation, so it's definitely not something to write home about yet. Here, there are some more details. If you're an expert, you might be interested in, say, how many bottom quarks tend to be in the events, and the answer is it tends to be 0. You know, how many, what other variables, like HT is a characterization of the total energy event, tends to be somewhat on the low side. So they tried to construct a model that would be able to explain this data and not be ruled out by other searches that we've already done. So the model is, they add a scalar field to the theory, it couples to quarks, it also couples to a quark and a particle they call psi that looks like missing momentum, so that's where the missing momentum is coming from. It's not dark matter, though, because this vertex would allow the psi to decay back into quarks, actually back into 3 quarks. And so that's at the level of couplings that they need, this would not actually be a good theory of dark matter. On the other hand, it could still look like missing momentum at the LHC. And they can fit the data if they choose the mass difference between the phi and the psi to be about 400 GeV or so, and the mass of the phi to be about 1.5 TeV. So that's interesting, and it's worth watching, and maybe it'll even turn out to be something. It won't be something about dark matter, though, if it is. So then I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about simplified models. Simplified models are the middle ground between a full theory and an effective field theory. They capture more details of the realistic theory, but they don't get overwhelmed by all the different parameters in a complete theory. Of course, there's a large number of simplified models, and so I'm going to look at a few that can describe the physics of the LHC and that are being used by the experimentalists to present their results. We'll see that actually there's interesting searches for dark matter, but also just interesting new phenomena as well. So the first type of simplified model has a vector particle. The idea is that there are quarks here. They interact with some new force carrier, so some kind of analog of the Z boson. It itself likes to couple to dark matter. And so this is how quarks produce dark matter, through the exchange of this particle. Of course, to actually see something at the LHC, you'd want to radiate off another, say, gluon or another quark so that you get the jet of hadrons. And then you would be looking at the momentum imbalance between this part of the event and the extra thing that you radiated. 5 minutes left. Oh my goodness. How did I do this? All right. So basically, you can construct this theory. Naively, it has a large number of parameters, but what we do in general is to set all the couplings equal and assume there's no couplings to leptons or Higgs bosons. So then the exclusions that they get are in the plane of the mass of the dark matter compared to the mass of this mediator, the Z prime. They have to choose couplings because there are really two more dimensions to this plot. There are parameters that describe the coupling here and the coupling there. So they've made some choices. Here they set the coupling to quarks to a quarter and the coupling of dark matter to one. And they rule out a region of parameter space that looks like this. The mass of the Z prime is ruled out if it's less than about 1.5 TeV or so. And the exclusion goes sort of up to the point where the mass of the Z prime is equal to twice the dark matter mass, because if you go past here, what happens is you can't produce the Z prime on shell and then have it decay into dark matter. And so things get suppressed up here and it's harder to make, it's harder to do it. You can do a similar thing here. This is from CMS. This is really just the same search from their point of view. And we can translate this into other parameter spaces if we want. In this case, they chose an axial vector interaction, which leads to a spin-dependent cross-section with protons. They did that on purpose because these bounds are weaker, and so they want to compare with them. And so here's the Atlas bound compared to PICO 60. You could also do the same thing at CMS and get a similar result. So one thing to point out is, again, this choice of couplings is actually pretty large. It's maybe not what we would expect for a typical theory of dark matter, but they're allowed. And this is biasing the result. So you have to keep in mind the fact that if you change these parameters, these plots change by a large to a large degree. And here's some other interpretations. I think since I'm essentially out of time, I won't go through them in detail. But you can see, again, here's some spin-dependent interaction with neutrons from ATLAS and a scalar mediator from CMS. And you can see that the direct detection experiments, of course, are doing a very, very good job above 10 GeV for this particular type of model. You can also look directly for the mediator by producing it and watching it decay. So here we have two quarks form a mediator, and then it decays into another, into two jets of hadrons. Their invariant mass will roughly reconstruct the invariant mass of the Z prime. There are interesting constraints being put just on the coupling to quarks because there's no dark matter anywhere in this particular search. And you can see as a function of the mass that you can put bounds at the level of couplings of about 0.1 or so if the mass is down around 1.5 TeV or so. If you put them together, here are the direct searches, or these roughly vertical bands, right? They're vertical because they don't depend on the dark matter mass. And then the missing energy searches we saw are down here. Of course, if I play with the couplings that they chose, I can actually make it so that these searches go away and these searches stay. So again, you know, caveat emptor. We can also build theories that have a colored scalar. For example, the dark matter may interact with quarks by exchanging a color scalar. In this case, the mediator has to be heavier than the dark matter, and that's the same kind of logic that was present in the supersymmetric searches, because the mediator has to be able to decay into the dark matter cosmologically. You can look for production of the pairs of the mediators. You can also look for production of one mediator particle and the dark matter. You get different kinds of limits because here you're not really sensitive to how the coupling of the mediator to the dark matter goes. So this particular type of search is not dependent on that coupling, and you can really just rule out regions of parameter space based on different searches. Here, of course, what you're sensitive to is to the strength of this coupling, and so you get a limit on the coupling of the dark matter to the mediator in a quark, which is actually in this case very weak. It's order one couplings that are excluded. So, you know, weakly coupled theories live way down here, and the constraints are rather limited. Do the same thing with direct detection. The interesting thing here that I've done with some collaborators at Michigan State University is to compute the one-loop contribution to this process. For a Majorana particle, naively, at tree level, you would have thought that it only had spin-dependent interactions, and therefore you get bounds from Pico. But if you actually compute this, even though it's one loop, and therefore it's very suppressed in perturbation theory, because the bounds from xenon are so much stronger, the bounds are really totally dominated by here, and you can see that xenon is really what characterizes what's allowed here. Now, the scale has changed from 1 down to about 0.1 or so. Okay, I'm going to say two words about ultralight mediators. One interesting limit is to actually have the mass of the Z prime-like object get very low. This is natural to talk about light dark matter, for example. A very nice theoretical construction is to have the couplings between the mediator and the standard model come from kinetic mixing with electromagnetism. So then the couplings of the mediator to the standard model actually just look like electromagnetism, but scaled down by a parameter called epsilon. I think Neil called it epsilon the first time. No? Okay. Sorry? Yeah, but did he call it epsilon? I mean, Bob definitely gets the credit for the theory, but anyway. Yeah, I have no time left and have to stop talking. So in the negative 1 minute that I have left, you can actually construct a discussion where the dark matter annihilates through the mediator into the standard model. So here now we have dark matter masses down around the MeV scale. This combination of parameters describes this cross-section. I promise I will actually stop talking very soon. And you can see that there are some lines here that describe basically where you would get the right relic density. And we can contrast these with searches. So these are projects at high luminosity, low energy facilities that are trying to search for production of these mediator particles, which then decay dominantly and visibly. And you can see the current limits here are in the solid lines. Proposed ones are in dashed lines. This is just in terms of the coupling between the mixing parameter. This is in terms of the parameter that controls the relic density. And you can see that you can actually study a very interesting region of relic density for light dark matter particles. You can also look for searches where the dark where the mediator is decaying visibly into standard, back into standard model particles. There's a wide array of projects and proposed projects that would do this. And you can even go beyond the dark photon and talk about other types of particles, including one that I've played with that has protophobic coupling to in order to address an anomaly that was observed in beryllium-8. I can tell you more about that at the coffee break if you want to. The point is that there are lots of theories that are lots of experiments coming up that are going to be able to probe lots of different kinds of theories at the MeV scale. So thank you. I'll leave you with my favorite sketch of dark matter. By the way, I conservatively took out 10 slides this morning because I knew I didn't have enough time.
Questions?
So given the results from the LHC so far, what would you say is the next collider experiment that would have significant potential for dark matter?
I think it really depends on sort of what parameter space is of interest. If you're talking about sort of the weak scale or TeV scale high mass things, the LHC is really the only game in town. And so, you know, maybe there's discussion of maybe building a 100 TeV collider. If that happens in our lifetime, that will be great. That said, it's not a particularly motivated target, right? It would just be hoping that there's something that will show up then. And I think there's a fairly good chance that dark matter does live somewhere below 100 TeV. Having said that, though, you know, it's really just waiting for the LHC, and so the reach that we have is the one kind of that I showed in those projections. If you're interested, however, in lower mass things, right, then there's a lot more opportunity to be creative, and you know, most of this work that's done on light been done on light mediators and MeV mass dark matter, and we're going to hear more about that from the direct search, I think, from Tongyan in just a second. She's nodding. There's been a huge amount of activity because MeV energies are much easier to access, right? And so you can actually have a good idea and get it built in a finite amount of time. And so there, I think, is where you're going to really see experiments and theory keep blooming.
before I ask the question, I just want to add one comment on that. I think the Tevatron will have something interesting to say when they come out with their G-2 results, in the sense that, in terms of probing new physics,
that's right,
they'll give some new interesting results the next year.
But right. So the idea there is that these light mass particles actually can contribute even indirectly to things like G-2 of the muon, and we have a long-standing hint that there may be something going on there, and let's hope that it stays.
On the subject of anomalies, I wondered if you could update us on the status of the beryllium anomaly.
I can. So just to give you what the idea is, this is a cartoon that was made by Flip Tenedo, who's speaking later on this afternoon. He's one of my collaborators here. There's a claim from a group that's based in Hungary. What they do is, they're nuclear experimentalists. They collide protons on a lithium target. They produce an excited state of beryllium-8. They watch it decay. They don't actually observe the ground state that comes out, but they look for E plus E minus being produced in what should be a photon in the standard model, and they see what looks like a bump in the invariant mass spectrum of the E plus E minus. So this leads them to conclude that maybe there's a new particle here. They tell us the mass should be around 17 MeV or so, and something about the branching ratio. So right now, this is very interesting. However, it's one experiment. We don't know if this is some kind of experimental glitch, if it's just badly modeled nuclear theory, right? These are complicated nuclei, and they're very hard actually to model either on the lattice or using many body, because they're just in the middle where you don't have enough particles to talk about, or too many particles to talk about for the lattice. The experiment that ran, these guys, has run again. They've collected data. They continue to see the bump at 17 MeV with new detectors. So some experimental things are being addressed by that. But of course, you know, the beamline and the analysis is still the same. I think you really need to have another group do it. There are a few groups that look like they credibly could. We've been talking to people at Notre Dame and also to a group in Montreal. And I don't know, you know, it doesn't take a lot to do an experiment like this, especially if you have the right kind of beamline already handy. I think, though, it's still at least a year away, because nothing is quite gelled. There's also a group at Mines, actually, that I've been talking to that want to use helium-4 and try to look at it from a different point of view. Right? Helium-4 has an excited state that's 20 MeV, and so it gives you enough energy. It's very clean, because helium-4 is already there. You don't have to make it through some nuclear reaction. If it's right, then it means that there's a new boson whose mass is 17 MeV and likes to couple to electrons and also quarks to some degree. Actually, there's been work done hypothesizing that maybe this is some kind of dark matter mediator. So it could definitely be relevant for dark matter, but of course it could also be that it's not relevant for dark matter. And you know, nothing that we have here is really suggestive one way or another.
I sent you an email a while ago about that, but so in 2001 or whatever, I mean, when we were doing MeV dark matter, They already had this. They already had exactly the same claim. I mean, with different mass, but in the ballpark, it was 7 MeV maybe. They always had something.
Well, it's slightly different, actually. So you're right that there's an experimental group that does have some subset of authors. No, it's not the same group. It's actually a different group.
Well, it's the same except one died, basically.
Well, yeah, that's not exactly true, but you're right that there is a subset of authors that's common between the two of them. They have actually previously said that they saw something at 12 MeV. If you looked at the data, it doesn't look like a nice peak like what they have now. What does that mean? I don't have any idea. I'm not an experimentalist. But I think it is fair to say that if you look at the circumstances behind that previous claim, they never really pushed it or got it published, or they themselves didn't take it very seriously as far as we can tell historically. Maybe at the time they did. I don't know. I wasn't there.
We just didn't encourage them to do so.
Right. So, I mean, all I can do is analyze what I have in front of me, right, which is an experiment that is published in PRL and that I can't find anything wrong with. On the other hand, I'm not an experimentalist, like I said before, and so I'm not saying
that they're wrong. I'm just saying that they have had something since a long time.
They did, yeah.
Speaking of anomalies, and maybe not related to dark matter, but what do you think about LHCb, all those anomalies?
They're very interesting. It's not clear they have anything to do with dark matters. You know, these are CP observables that are looking at universality of the coupling to leptons. Again, you know, right now we're in this frustrating situation where it seems like they're significant, but there are pretty big uncertainties in the theory. Also, the experimental, you know, significance is not that high for each one individually. So, right, now, that's right. Well, But you know, you're kind of combining apples and oranges, so is the combined significance really significant? It's debatable, to be fair. Now that said, this is sort of our most credible hint of new physics from the LHC at the moment, and it's definitely worth following up. It also is something where, right now, the way we understand it, it's not clear it has anything to do with dark matter, but of course, just finding new particles always might be sort of the way to edge into that sector, so let's hope.
Okay, so we should probably move on at this point, so let's thank Tim again.